This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 27 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. In today's episode, Sideshow Benny visits our studio. Here's our hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max. We're back for another foray into the Kinky Cast. Beast, how you doing tonight?
I am well, Woody. I am very, very well. My co-hostess for the evening, Kate, is a little under the weather, so we're moving along without her tonight. We have our guest, though, in the studio. I don't know what to say about this man. Known him for quite a few years. Seen him do stuff that scares me, even. Seen him do it to himself, even, which is scarier. We have Sideshow Benny with us tonight, one of the leaders of the modern Sideshow Revival for more than 15 years. Hello, Benny.
How you doing?
I am well. I am well. You are a geek. Am I correct on that?
Well, technically a geek either works with computer stuff or bites the heads off of live animals. And I don't really do that. I am more along the lines of what is called a working act.
A working act. What is a working act?
Well, a working act is somebody who has trained their body and their mind to do basically stupid human feats, to do things that are painful to ordinary people. They're differentiated between people who are born with special abilities or things like that and people who train, and I have trained.
And let me give our listeners a little bit of your resume. That includes circus skills, far breathing, bed of nails, glass walking, human blockhead, human dartboard, stapling, swallowing 24-inch omelet glow sticks and regurgitating them completely lit up, bear traps. And the list, I'm sure, can go on. So you're a working act. So sum it up. You are a sideshow performer?
I'm a sideshow performer. I do standard classic American sideshow feats from the 19th and 20th century. I've just kind of updated them for modern sensibilities.
And a kinky twist?
And a kinky twist occasionally. And I'm basically a working act. I'm basically a guy who does stuff that I know better than to actually do.
So you travel around the country, around the whole United States.
Yep.
And you do things like driving nails into your face.
Right.
And you make a living at this.
If you want to call it a living, they pay me to do this.
You know, I'm looking at him right now. There's no hole in his face.
But the nails go in somewhere.
It's true. I take a hammer and a 20-penny nail, which is 4.5 inches of solid steel. As Anna says, my partner, kind of like me on the Viagra. But, hey, thank you very much. And, I take a hammer and I pound it into my nose, straight into my face.
Now, Benny, how do you get started in this?
Misspent youth.
Misspent youth. Yes, I have a comment here from my research monkeys. In the mid to late 60s, we're going to date you a bit, a young Benjamin Wade witnessed some of the last traveling sideshows working the fair and carnival circuits, and he was a hook.
Pretty much. I saw the stuff when I was a kid, like it says in the at the state fairs and carnivals and things like that. I saw the fire eaters, I saw the human blockheads, the electric girl, people on beds of nails, things along those lines, and I was fascinated and have been fascinated with it my whole life. Read about it, researched everything I could find on it, and it was just kind of a hobby sort of thing, you know, something that I, you know, kind of kept up with. until I was well into my adult years when I should have known better.
So some people collect butterflies and put the pins in the butterflies. You put the pins in yourself.
Well, kind of. When I was 10 years old, a week or so after my 10th birthday, I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. I saw those women screaming, and I thought, at that time, my little 10-year-old brain said, I want me some of that. So I wanted to be an entertainer. I wanted to be, basically a musician, something like that. And I played music from the time I was 13 to now. I'm still playing. But I pursued that for 30-odd years. And, played the folk music circuit and things like that. And did okay, but never really had to file a tax return on my entertainment endeavors. And still I started pounding nails into my head.
So you've always been a performer.
Always been a performer, an offbeat performer. Even when I was playing folk music, it was not, kind of your ordinary Peter, Paul, and Mary kind of stuff.
So no bridge over troubled water?
No. Bridge over a few troubled daughters, but I would do solo shows where I would be playing songs, and I would break out a mechanical bunny rabbit that played drums to accompany me. I would stop the show and read articles out of the Weekly World News. It was an entertaining spectacle, even though it was in a folk music type format.
So it's a variety show.
Basically, and I'm still doing basically a variety show.
Yes, for those that have seen his act, it's quite a entertainment thing. The prattler and the chatter is part of the whole thrill of the event.
One of my best friends is a professional stand-up comic, and we were having a discussion one evening, and I said, basically, it all boils down to I'm a prop comic. I'm a carrot top kind of guy, and he argued with me. No, you're not a prop comic. Prop comics are the lowest rung. Blah blah blah. And I said, well, look, I come up on stage with a box full of shit. I crack wise. I make people laugh. And I pull stuff out of my box and use it. He said, damn, you are a prop comic. So.
I don't think Carrot is going to ever give you a run for your money in your own venue, though.
No.
I am seeing from my research monkeys again that your transition to full-time professional occurred after you kept on winning bar bets and something about a trip to Mardi Gras.
I was, oddly enough, I was a dulcimer player. And usually you associate those with women in long gingham skirts and things like that. But, I was doing traditional folk music kind of stuff, some Appalachian fiddle tunes, Irish music, and then I would throw in Madonna or Green Day, something like that, just to mix things up and confuse people. But I was playing a dulcimer festival in New Orleans that took place every year around Mardi Gras. So one of the draws to get players to come down there for not a lot of pay was you got to go to Mardi Gras. So a group of us from the festival went to the French Quarter, Mardi Gras Day. All of us in costume, and I was dressed as a Viking, and I took my nail and my hammer. One of the other guys at the festival, one of my friends, would go into bars ahead of me and would say, would go up to the bartender and say, I got this friend out here. He's crazy as hell. And for a pitcher of beer and a couple of shots of Jaeger, he'll drive a nail into his head. And the bartenders were like, what? And at this time, this is almost 20 years ago, that sort of thing wasn't as common as it is now. So they didn't know what he was talking about. One of the bartenders said, will he bleed? And he said, no. I said, okay, let's do it. So everybody from the festival that went with us, and there was probably 8 to 10 people, something like that, got plowed, got stinking drunk, and the nail bought all the drinks. The next day, one of the people from the festival that didn't go with us came up to me and says, I guess you know you were on the news last night. And I'm like, no. And she said, yeah, the anchor said, well, we've got some strange ones in town for Mardi Gras this year. And then they ran the clip, and there's you in the middle of Bourbon Street with beads festooned off your Viking helmet, pounding a nail into your nose.
So your first national coverage
was on Mardi Gras Day on local New Orleans news channels. I came back to Nashville after the festival and was telling some friends about it. And we were in an art group called Untitled here in Nashville.
Right.
And I was a member of that and was telling some of the folks about it at one of our meetings. And one of the guys says, well, you ought to put something together and do it at one of our shows. I thought, that's not a bad idea. I could probably do that. So I got together with a friend of mine who I knew ate a light bulb. And we put together about a 20-minute act and worked on it for 3 or 4 months before the next Untitled show. We performed it at the next show, which was at the old cannery over on 8th Avenue.
8th Avenue.
And we got up, we did our show. People went nuts. They thought we'd been doing it for years. They thought we were professionals. And I thought, you know, I'm maybe onto something here. So at that point, I started actively pursuing learning more acts and figuring out how to do things and really honing the show. And my partner that was with me at that show was with me for 5-6 months, something like that. And then I went solo.
Starting to learn new acts. This is a trial and error process. We will talk about your documentary here in a bit.
Okay.
But this is a trial and error process. How do you go about learning to do some of this stuff?
Nowadays, there's schools that teach you how to do these things. At that time, there was no Coney Island Sideshow School like there is now.
There are schools.
There's a Coney Island Sideshow School that runs, I think, once a year. My friend Harley Newman out of Pennsylvania teaches a school. Harley's one of the best acts in the business, and he teaches a school twice a year, and it's like a 3 or 4 day intensive course, and you learn a lot of stuff. But at that time, you were kind of on your own. You tried to find sources that you could read that might clue you in on how to do some of these things. But a lot of that is really bad information that will get you hurt. And basically, a lot of it is trial and error. I've had some acts that I tried that I liked that I kept. And I've had some acts that I tried and I thought, oh, I'm not doing that again.
What is the most notable one that we won't find as part of your show now?
I tried to shoot a pack of 100 Black Cat firecrackers off of my chest with them taped to my chest. And it went pretty well for about 75 firecrackers. And then I forgot to factor in that I'm pretty hairy.
Oh.
And I kind of caught my chest on fire.
Wow.
So, so that one didn't make it into the act.
No, that isn't one you can do 5 nights a week while you're on tour.
Yeah, twice on Saturdays.
So basically you're going through obscure literature.
Right.
That is full of bragging and inflation, trying to find the secrets to this.
Right.
Because you were on the forefront of helping to revive this disappearing art form.
I was kind of one of the early acts that really kind of became known. Jim Rose was out there working, and I saw him perform years and years ago, and I kept thinking, I could do that. I can do that. They do an act. I could do that. So, you know, he was kind of an inspiration to get me started actually thinking that, yeah, this is kind of something that I could probably put together and do. And it wasn't long after that that we had the New Orleans trip and the Untitled show.
Everything started coming together.
Started falling together. So that was pretty early on. Now I've had people come up to me at shows and say, I saw you when I was 15 years old, and now I'm doing a show, and I'm like, that's great. You're taking work from me.
But you are now a father
I'm a father of these folks, and one of the real well-known innovators, one of the original guys named Melvin Burkhart, kind of took me under his wing. Melvin is the guy who created the act of the human blockhead, driving the nail up your nose, back in like the 20s or 30s. And I met him when he was 92, I think it was. And I was already a working performer, but he took me under his wing and he taught me a lot about being a showman and a lot about professional ethics and things like that. So I've kind of tried to do the same thing with young people that come up to me and ask me questions about it, because Melvin was just as wide open and accommodating as you could possibly be for a young guy like young. I was in my 40s, a young guy like myself. And he, you know, really taught me a lot and meant a lot to me.
Are there secrets to doing this, or is it just plain nerves and stupidity?
There's a lot of nerves and stupidity, but there are techniques that you use to minimize the damage. There's ways that you do things, and there's ways that you don't want to do things. When I put my hand in animal traps, there's a certain way that I put them in, because if I put them in any other way, I can break a finger. I can break a finger if I put them in right, but it's much less likely to do serious damage than it is if I go in from a bad angle or something like that.
Which brings me to, in the days of Obamacare, I can imagine what your application for health care looks like.
Well, I have a lovely bride of almost 40 years who has a real job with insurance. And
boy, that's a good thing.
Yes, it is. However, my personal physician knows what I do and asks me constantly. So, you been eating light bulbs lately, or how many darts have you taken to the back?
Yes, one of Benny's acts is to be the human dartboard, and he invites spectators up, arms them with hypodermic-tipped darts, and has a target on his back.
Yeah, a lot of people do the human dartboard act. I've taken it a step further and actually have a dartboard tattooed to my shoulder, which kind of elevated the act. And
that was all tax deductible.
Oh yeah, it was a total write off because I can use it on my stage.
Your taxes again must be very, very interesting reading.
Yeah, I get Lucky Strike cigarettes and light those with a grinder to my face, and I deduct the smokes. So, because I don't smoke in real life, but I only smoke professionally. I
only smoke professionally. How politically correct. I am looking here, and I am seeing television shows. You've been on TV. Yeah. Quite a bit, it seems.
A bit, yeah.
Yeah. The E on Entertainment TV, VH1. Yeah.
I was on the old Talk Soup show. I was Clip of the Week.
Clip of the Week. What were you doing?
Well, I was on the Crook and Chase show, and Charlie. Crook and Chase, and Charlie and Lorianne stood on top of me while I was on my bed of nails. And that made Clip of the Week because Charlie Chase stumbled a little bit and stepped on my junk. So they kept running that clip over and over.
And did you get to look up Lorianne's skirt?
She said that she wore pants that day, and she looked down at me from my chest as she was standing on me, and she said, "No skirt for you, Benny." So,
takes
all the fun away.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Not everything's a perk, I guess.
Speaking of perk, I mean perv. So I know you have a kinky angle to this show, too. Sometimes you perform at kink clubs.
Yes. Yes, I do.
How does that change from the vanilla work?
Well, the vanilla work depends on the crowd that I'm working.
These are not kid parties acts, right?
Well, actually, I work. I can work anywhere from PG to triple X. So I do a lot of all ages shows with kids there, and I clean up the language. I take out the sexual innuendo and all that stuff. I leave a little bit in for the parents, because if the kids get my reference, that's not my fault. That's bad parenting, you know? So, but yeah, kids love my shows. I've got a quote in my promo book that's from a 6 year old that was at a show that I did in Philadelphia, for the, Philadelphia Fringe Festival. It's a big outdoor show. And, after my performance, the kid and his dad came up to me, and the dad says, he's got a question for you. And I said, yeah, what you want to know? And the kid looked at me and he says, why don't you ever say ouch? So that went right in the promo book. Basically the vanilla shows from PG to R rated, I keep my pants on.
And the X-rated?
And the X-rated, I have some piercings in my southern hemisphere, and I lift weights with those.
The first time I sat in on this act with some friends, they were shocked, dismayed, horrified, stunned, and thrilled.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I have steam irons, and I lift those with several pierced body parts. I lift them by my ears, with my tongue, swing them with my nipples. And on the more adult shows, they're swung from down low. And I've noticed as I've gotten older, the irons are tending to bump on the stage now, which they didn't used to do. So, what are you going to do?
tie a knot in them, I guess.
I guess. I'm going to have to use lighter irons, but where's the fun in that?
Well, what are we tying a knot into? Or do we even want to go there?
No, let's not.
If it's a Prince Albert, he should be very proud.
Well, no, actually, I had a woman come up to me at a show, and she had heard about this act, and she said, well, I've got a question about that act you do. I said, yeah, well, what is it? And she said, the piercings, are they in the franks or the beans? And mine are in the beans.
I like that comparison. I never thought of that.
Frank and beans. Yeah. I hadn't heard of that one before.
And the skin there is, you know, it's like elbow skin. It's like a turkey neck. It just stretches forever. So I've had grown men weep watching that.
Mine withdrew to a tactful place. But besides your being featured on various clips, you actually was a feature performer in the documentary Stomachs of Steel.
Right. It was on the Discovery Channel. They were doing a documentary on sword swallowing, and they wanted to have somebody in the documentary to follow around who was learning how to swallow swords. And I had been working with a guy named Dan Meyer, who is the president of the Sword Swallowers International Association.
There's an association for everything.
Yes, there are. And they contacted him. And he said, well, I've got this guy that's already performing. He's doing, you know, a full show, but he's trying to add sword swallowing to it. Do you want to talk to him? And the producer said, yeah, give me his number. So they called me up. And the show was, the documentary was produced by the New Zealand Museum of Natural History. So the producer called me from New Zealand and just chatted and liked the way I sounded and booked me for this thing. They flew into Nashville. They filmed me doing my show at the old 12th and Porter. Dan came up and swallowed a sword. And I said that I was learning to do this. And they basically followed me around as I went from to different sword swallowers as they were giving me techniques and tips and everything on how to do it. And they wanted to see if by the end of the show I could get one down. And at the end of the show, I still couldn't, which still made for great TV.
Oh, it did. It
and,
did.
Was very dramatic and everything. It was, one of those wah-wah kind of endings. But a few years after the fact, I had some medical tests done, and they had to put a camera down my throat. And after they were finished, the doctor was telling my wife, yeah, this is fine, and this is this, and this is... And by the way, did you know that he was born with a deformed throat? And she said, what? He said, yeah. He said, most everybody has a throat that's a nice round passage, and his is really narrow and shaped like a horseshoe. And she said, well, no wonder he can't swallow a sword. And the doctor looked at her and thought and said, oh, yeah, he's that guy. So no matter what I did, there was no way that a sword was going down. So they picked the wrong person to do this documentary, but I got a world of publicity out of it, and I can still put As Seen on the Discovery Channel.
Yes, it was quite interesting when I ran across it quite by accident one night.
It shows up in reruns every once in a while. I had somebody email me once and tell me that they were on a flight from New York to London, and they showed it on the flight. So,
you, besides being a showbiz person yourself, a featured act oftentimes, you have also been a opener for some interesting people, such as?
Probably the biggest name that I opened up for was Alice Cooper. Did that a couple of years in a row when he played a venue in Baltimore. At the Meriwether Post Pavilion around Halloween. Got to open up for him a couple of times. I've worked with like Big and Rich and, various people like
Big
that.
Big and Rich, I find that unique, that this doesn't seem like a country and western act at all.
Well, fire eating crosses many genres. I've been in several, a few country music videos doing fire eating and blowing fireballs and things like that. So
that was you.
That was me.
That was you.
In Nashville, if they want a guy that eats fire or pounds a nail into his face.
Your own speed dial.
Well, I've always said that being from Nashville, there's, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting 50 guitar players, and they're all better than you are. But if you want a guy that pounds a nail up his nose and eats fire, I'm the only game in town.
Only one in town.
So a lot of video producers have heard of me. I've seen my publicity shots and things like that. And they booked me for things like that. I did a Tennessee Lottery commercial a year or so ago.
I remember that one too.
And was doing fire eating in that. And you'll never know where I'm going to show up.
This is true. And speaking of showed up, the rather large summer festival here in Tennessee, you was there in 2007, Bonnaroo.
Played Bonnaroo with some of the burlesque ladies from here in town.
Yeah, and burlesque, that brings us up to your segues into your co-performer now, Anna
Fiametta.
She adds some burlesque to your own show.
She does. She's been my partner for about 6 years now. She does a straitjacket escape. She does fire eating. She does glass walking. And she does a human pincushion act that is second to none. And and she also does we do some burlesque acts together.
I have seen the lovely Anna performing with you, and she is the sadistic sweetheart of the sideshow.
That's her.
She is a twisted individual.
Well, yeah, but our corkscrews go in the same direction, so it works out pretty well.
And she is your partner also. You have a wife, but you're also Polly. And
right.
So Anna is keeping it in the family.
Exactly.
The wife, what does she think of this career adjustment of yours?
Like I said, we've been married for 38 years, and we've been together for almost 40. And she's seen me go through a lot of different stages over the last four decades. And she just figured this was another one. And then it started, you know, making money. And she used to worry about it, but now she knows that I'm a professional. I know what I'm doing. I've done this for a long time now.
Well, famous last words. I'm a professional. But our loving and supportive sweethearts, we have to have them.
Exactly.
I think the disclaimer is don't try this at home.
Yes. Leave it to professionals.
And you make that disclaimer in your shows all the time.
All the time. Yeah, a few shows that some of the shows at the more kinky venues that I've worked, I always say, you know, that I usually give my standard disclaimer of don't try this at home. But a lot of you people out there have done things way more fucked up than you're going to see me do tonight. So, you know, carry on.
And you have played literally from coast to coast.
Pretty much, yes.
And international?
No, I haven't gone out of the country.
Except for Canada, I'm sure.
I've been to Canada, but I haven't performed in Canada. I've performed in most of the 48, the lower 48. I haven't been to Alaska or Hawaii. I've got this weird phobia about flying, so I don't. I drive to all of my shows because, for one thing, I don't like to fly. It's just a pain in the ass. I've done it, but I just don't like doing it. And the second thing is everything in my act can be used as a weapon. You know, I mean, how can I get a bed of nails in the overhead compartment?
Yeah, I'm just imagining the TSA agents.
Here. Yeah, not to mention those steam irons.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the TSA goes through my stuff and it's, okay, you got a giant meat cleaver. You've got animal traps. You've got hammers and nails. You've got a bucket of broken glass.
And you go, and so?
Well, I did have that. I was doing a show in upstate New York, and the missus went with me on this show, and we dashed across Canada one day, and we were in my car, and all my props were loaded, and the guy at the border looked in the back of the car, and he said, "What's all this?" And I said, "I'm an entertainer. It's my props." And he says, "Sir, that tells me nothing." And I said, "Well, there's a bed of nails. There's, you know," and I start running down the list of things. And he says, "Whoa, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Do you have any guns? Do you have any liquor?" I'm like, "Nope." He said, "Go on."
And which direction were you going?
I was going into Canada at that time.
When I went to Canada, we got Kate and Anne and myself. We went up to Canada. And the Canadians didn't want to let us in. They wanted to open the trunk and search and all that. And then when we come back into America, hi,
yeah,
keep on going.
Yeah, coming back, there was no problem at all. It was like, good to see you. Of course, this was pre, you know, 9/11 and all that stuff. So
we were post 9/11. Well, yeah.
Then I have no explanation for you.
Yeah.
They just looked at you and said,
"You know, they have rules about perverts in that country."
Exactly.
Going into Canada, but the Americans, they let me back. That's the scary part.
Yeah.
We
were rid of him and we let him back.
Yeah. It's been said you have a legendary pain threshold. Do you think that's accurate?
I always say that the only time something hurts is the first time I do it, because I don't know what to expect. Once I know what to expect, I can, you know, make mental adjustments to where I don't feel it. When I'm getting hit in the back with darts, I'm aware that there's things hitting me in the back, but it doesn't register as pain anymore. I did a grand opening of the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum in San Antonio. And for the ribbon cutting as they were opening the place, I blew a fireball and burned the ribbon in half. And then I was the human red carpet. I was on my bed of nails and they had the red carpet going over me. So everybody who came in had to step on my stomach to get in. And then as the evening was going on, it was all VIPs and dignitaries and Texas state senators and all this stuff in there. And I was walking around with my stapler, and people were stapling money to my chest, and all the money was going to charity. And I probably had 350, 400 staples in my chest and stomach that day. And it just, you know, it was just another day at the office.
I'm guessing these are shorter than normal staples.
I used one of the staple guns like you put up band posters with, and they're sharp points rather than the flat point ones, and they're quarter inch. So, yeah, I looked like I had the measles at the end of the show, but.
Yeah, it's pretty well going through the epidermis there.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this is, I've seen this in a lot of squealing, giggling, and blushing women. Has this ever went horribly wrong? Have they ever hit the wrong spots?
Hit the wrong spots with
what? With the stapler.
With the stapler?
Yeah.
No, not really. I had one incident where I got stapled up in the shoulder area, and I had a big knot jump up, and it bruised really badly. But that was the only time that anything, as far as the stapler goes.
And ever being the safety conscious individual that you are, even though you're doing crazy stuff, I know the dartboard, you hold a piece of wood down your back to protect the spine.
Right.
And all that. So you do proceed with some.
And your head, I assume.
No, no, just the spine. My head's hard enough that the darts, you know, when it hit me in the back of the head, they just bounce off.
Have they hit you in the back of the head?
Oh, of course.
Wow.
I did the Full Moon Tattoo Convention in Nashville this year, back in April. And I picked a guy out of the audience to throw the darts that I knew. And I knew that he plays in a dart tournament, you know, that he's in a dart league. And so I thought, yeah, I'll pick him. He, no problem there. You know, it'll be a cakewalk. I didn't realize at the time that he was stinking drunk. And so he throws the first dart, and it kind of hit my back and just flopped out onto the floor. He didn't put enough English on it or something. And so I kind of glanced around, looking kind of over my shoulder as he threw the second one, and it hit me in the side of the face. And so, of course, I milked that for all it was worth.
Right.
You know, it stung, but because I wasn't expecting it in the face. But we went on with the show, and he sucked. And the random woman that I pulled up with him to do it, got a bullseye. She did great.
So just never know, because you play a lot of drunk venues.
I do. I should be ashamed, but I do. I've been hit, you know, in the back, in the butt, in the back fat, in the arms, I got hit in the fingernail once, which was interesting. Where I was holding the board, it stuck in the end of my fingernail on my index finger. And I managed to reach around, and there's a picture of me floating around somewhere with a dart sticking out of my fingernail. Didn't hurt because it didn't pierce all the way through the nail.
Are these regulation darts?
They're modified. They're a really heavy gauge hypodermic needle on the point, but they're essentially pretty much the same thickness as a regular dart point. They're just super sharp, so that they'll pierce my dermis.
The back end of the dart is the same with the feathers and everything.
I use the plastic ones mm-hmm. because they're colorful and you can see them from the back of the room. But yeah, I buy standard darts and just modify the points.
Ever the showman. It's all about the show, right?
Absolutely.
What is some of the after show comments from these drunken venues? We know about the kids. The kids are in awe and mystified, but the adults.
The adults, it runs the gamut. I've been told at one show that I was evil incarnate, and I was responsible for all of the evil in the world because of what I do. Most of the time, it's like, how do you do that? Or, don't that shit hurt? Or, you know, It's all over the map as far as the comments.
It's good to be the person that's responsible for all the evil, because that takes it off the pressure off everyone else.
Exactly. I figure I'm the scapegoat.
Yeah. What about the groupies? The sideshow performer get groupies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It happens.
Anna, Wifey, let's don't be listening right now. So all performers have groupies. So you do get what the Beatles got.
I don't know. I certainly don't get the mass quantities that the Beatles got, but there are people that are fascinated by that sort of thing and want to be close to the
close to the bin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had, one woman years ago that, and somehow, I don't know how it happened, ended up back in my room with me. And the next morning, she asked if I had a spare nail. And I said, yeah, I've got one in my box. Why? And she said, well, I'd like to have one. And I'm like, okay. You know. And she said, I want to be able to prove that I got nailed by the nail guy.
Okay. And a trip to Home Depot and away you go.
And your bumper sticker. That leads us up to one of your bumper stickers is?
Sideshow Benny says, don't drink and drive nails up your nose.
Yeah, so the nails are famous. Does your interest in kink, I presume you are kinky, you're not a normal man at all. You are a legend. Is this anything to do with your career choice, or did the kink come after the career choice? Or
always been about half a bubble off plum, you know. I was this way before I was that way.
You was this way before it was in fashion to be this way.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I started, I was doing some leather work and started making floggers and things like that back in the, 80s, I guess, you know, in the early 80s, something like that. And so I became kind of known for that, because they were a little hard to find.
There's hard to find into the 90s,
yeah,
even.
Yeah, so I made and sold several of those just for, you know, just kind of as a sideline. You know, if somebody wanted one, I'd make them one. I heard from a guy just recently, found me on Facebook. Haven't seen him in over 20 years. I still got the flogger you made me. I'm like, great.
Speaking of Facebook, do you want to put a plug in for your Facebook site? Because I presume you always want friends.
Sure. I've got Sideshow Benny. You can look up. I had to do it as Sideshow Benny instead of Sideshow is one word, but I had to do it as two words for Facebook because they wouldn't let my first name be Sideshow. But they were okay with my first name being Side, which I've never figured that out. We've also got a fan page, Sideshow Benny and Anna Fiametta, and join us there. I post things about the show and, you know, where we're playing and things like that on that one. But you can just do a search for Sideshow Benny and Anna Fiametta.
We'll put that on our Hot Links page.
So you've always been bent. And what does future hold?
What does the future hold? Well, I'm coming into my dotage. So I figure I'll do this as long as I'm physically able to. I just turned 60. So I'm,
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I get the senior discount at Kroger now, which just rocks. And so, yeah, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing for as long as I'm physically able to and just let life happen.
Are you going to start a school like so many have? To bring up the next generation? Do you have a apprentice in the wings?
Not really. I've taught some of my, one of my grandsons how to do a few things.
Oh, I bet that went over really well.
Oh, yeah. My daughter grew up around this stuff. So she had when she was a kid, she had a friend stay the night with her, and they went downstairs for something to do some laundry or something. And the friend says, what is that? And my daughter looked over and she said, oh, that's my dad's bed of nails. He's got this little freak show that he does. So, you know, I'm just dad, you know, and that's the, so yeah, I taught him how to smash a soup can on his finger for his like eighth birthday, something like that. And there wasn't a, an undented can in the house for about a year. And a couple of years ago for his Christmas present, I taught him how to put a nail up his nose. And I told him, I said, now, if you show somebody this once, it's amazing. If you show them twice, you're teaching them how to do it. Take very good care of this, and it'll buy you drinks all over the world.
Yeah.
So,
how old was he at the time?
He is, let's see, at the time, that was 2 years ago, so I think he was 12.
You're teaching a 12-year-old to shove a nail up his nose?
Sure. It's my grandson.
It's your legacy.
Exactly.
So this kid was, I'm sure, popular at school.
I don't know. he doesn't tell me that he's been doing it, but I assume he has.
What 12-year-old can hide that light under a bushel?
Exactly.
Where are we next on the road?
We've taken a little bit of time off, but I've got I think I've got some stuff coming up out of state in September, I think. So I'd have to look at my book, but I don't have anything local to the Nashville area booked right now.
Our listeners are all over the country right now.
And 38 countries.
And 38 countries. Where can they be looking for you in this fall?
I will be in Philadelphia at the end of September, and around Labor Day, I'm doing a fair in Wisconsin somewhere, but I'm not sure exactly where.
So you could be anywhere.
I could show up anywhere.
Look at your pub and for the strange goings on, right?
Yeah, you never know where I'll show up. I always say that people say, well, where do you do this stuff? I said, anywhere that'll book me. I've worked bars, nightclubs, kink clubs, colleges, art festivals, biker events, tattoo conventions, you name it. I've worked fairs. I've worked amusement parks. Any place that'll book me, I will happily show up.
But you haven't done the First Baptist Church yet. He's thinking.
No, I don't think I've done a church. Well, not while it was still a church.
there's a disclaimer right there.
There is a disclaimer.
I played Corcoran Institute of Art and Design in D.C. It's part of the Smithsonian Complex. I did that one weekend, and the next weekend I was at a community center in Dixon. So that tells you the gamut of for a heavy metal festival in Dixon.
for our international and our national listeners, Dixon is a small city west of Nashville, conservative place, but they have some interesting happenings going on in Dixon. A pagan festival, a heavy metal festival,
yep,
and Sideshow Benny.
And Sideshow Benny occasionally. In fact, I got my dartboard tattooed at in Dixon at Lotus Tattoo. A friend of mine owns the shop, and she did it for me.
So you just never know about small town America.
You never know.
So you play small towns, big towns, and everything in between.
I've played, you name it, and I've probably performed there except a Baptist church.
Except a Baptist church. Something to look forward to. Benny, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, happy to be here. It was a lot of fun.
It was very interesting.
I think it was one of our smoothest shows we have had in quite a while.
Give the editor the night off.
Yeah. Yeah. He just spent 8 hours editing another show.
Drop a nickel in the Benny jukebox and, you know, and I'm off and running.
But thank you, Benny.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
You have been listening to episode 27 of the Kinky Cast. Today we featured Sideshow Benny. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody and the Beast, I'm Max. See you next week when we tour the Leather Archive and Museum.